back, the most consistent podcast in the Pultep Sports Network. Can you keep a secret? Private conversations with public figures. We just did an interview you're going to hear shortly. This guy's a stallion, right? This Brooks Bollinger. I mean, it's good to be Brooks Bollinger, wouldn't you say?
It's pretty impressive.
Even his, like his Zoom, it's like silky. He's got the old white earphones in. It sounded good. Little stubble. I didn't know him. I'm not a Badger guy. I've met him before, but I always think whoever plays shortstop is the best athlete, right? Or point guard or quarterback, and he did all three. What was your take? I mean, you know way more than him, and you know him personally. Did you learn something new in this interview?
I mean, some of his stories are fantastic. I mean, he is. He's just really a smooth dude. I mean, think about it. He was a freshman starting quarterback that won the Rose Bowl.
I know.
And you got to have your shit together to be able to handle something like that at that magnitude. That's back in the day before the CFP, right? That's when the Rose Bowl was the granddaddy of them all. It still is. But I think the thing about Brooks is, you know, since I met him and got to know him better, he's that way all the time, right? He's just real even keel. Nothing seems to, you know, get him riled up or – you know, juiced up. He's just right down the fairway.
Processes information quickly, right? To be a four-year starter high school, four-year starter college, and even some of his stories, you know, here's the playbook. You're in the lineup tomorrow. I mean, I think in some ways what I was impressed by, just from a podcast standpoint, most guests just kind of, they just show up, and you could tell he kind of had his stuff loaded up, and he was great.
He was.
How you like it? I want to hear. So you've been in Arizona for,
right. Yep.
You know, not quite a year, but
almost a year. Yep.
What has changed? What's Arizona Tom like? Like, are you concealing and carrying? Are you?
I should be.
Like, what? I would think. Like, when I lived in New York, there were a couple things where I became more New York. How have you become more Arizona?
You know, you got to be a pretty aggressive driver, right? So I think my driving's clicked up a notch.
Yeah.
You know, I like to maybe compare it to, you know, my boys like F1 and they watch that show. So the one thing I will say, I've definitely amped up my driving game. You got to have your head on a swivel and be ready to roll when you hit that freeway.
Are you saying like giving people the finger?
No, like... you have to like, you know, New York would be a good example too from a traffic standpoint, but Phoenix, it's pretty much someone's going 30 miles an hour because it's someone older, or they're going 110 miles an hour. So you have to find that sweet spot and get in there. And, you know, so definitely become Arizona's definitely a fast driving state, and you have to have your wheels right.
How about lifestyle? Like here, I'm an empty nester, but I still like am like drunk all the time. I don't know how. My eyes are red till about noon. You are out there. You don't know as many people.
Right.
Did you get is it almost like rehab? Like you're out there, you got your swimming pool, your cold tub. Are you kind of like, now you're home. Are you just like, is this like Vegas when you come back to Minnesota?
Yeah, well, like last night we all went out. We had the Wild, obviously, here for the day, which was great. And then, you know, I went out a little bit and then I had an issue with my kid. So, but yeah, it's a little bit of like, a reunion, right? You come back for the 25th. So it's been fun. But, you know, out in Arizona, it's like the thing that's so interesting is like comparable to Minnesota. So Minnesota, you got the winter, right? You got this, you know, this kind of 6-month window where it can be pretty poor weather. And in Arizona right now, we're rolling into the summer. And the summer sucks. It is so hot. It's unbelievable. And you can just see the level of, like at the airport, right? During the non-summer months, it's packed. People are coming in, you know, January, February, people are coming there. And now you go to the airport, no one's flying into Phoenix for any recreational purposes. I mean, it might be business and whatnot, but it's a little bit of a, I like it a lot. I mean, I love it. And you come out and seen us a couple times, but it's good to be back in Minnesota too.
I think it's great out there. I, you know, we're not a topical podcast, but this will come out, and we have both the final of the Stanley Cup and the NBA. I just wanted to get your take. Maybe let's do hockey quick.
Sure.
As you might imagine, I'm all for some reason, the Florida Panthers are Team USA in my head.
Okay.
I really enjoy this Canadians not winning the cup since 93.
Yeah.
I don't like McDavid. I know he's the best, but there's something about him. He seems like a mouth breather. He's got a red beard. I just don't like, I have a major problem with Canadian hockey. Not like I love, like Jake Middleton's Canadian. He's a folk hero. I love him, but like Team Canada-ish. I think it's hilarious that they haven't won the cup since 93. I want Florida to be chanting USA in Miami when they're winning, and I love Tkachuk chewing his mouth guard. What side are you on, NHL?
Oh, for sure. Well, again, I don't have that much I haven't put that much thought into it.
I don't know why it's like the Olympics for some reason.
Yeah, I didn't put that much thought into people's beards and mouth breathing and stuff like that. I like Florida for sure. You know, actually, I was rooting for the Stars, right? Because of Suter and my wife and my son like the Stars, so I was rooting for the Stars. So disappointed to see them lose, but I think Florida's the best team. So I'll be pulling for Florida. I don't have any animosity toward Canadians because I work with a lot of Canadians, as do you, by the way. And so
Canadian hockey. Canadian
okay. All right.
Hockey. Like
yeah.
Ryan Reynolds, Shania Twain. I got all you Canadians I know. But I don't know what it is. There's an arrogance to Canadian hockey. You only see it around the Olympics, the World Juniors. They're always the next prodigy seems to always be, you know, the next Canadian product coming at you, whether it's Bedard, Celebrini, et cetera. So you've worked in sports a long time. So Edmonton's a riddle to me, right? Because they shouldn't have beat Dallas. So Dallas has more depth. They have better goaltending. They have better defense. They won. I wouldn't have thought they would have even beat some of the other teams. They beat, you know, Skinner is their goalie. I'm giving a lot of credit to Florida going on the run last year and then losing the final, because I remember that old Gretzky story. He sees the Islanders after they won the cup and they knocked out the Oilers, and they're not even celebrating in the locker room, and he kind of learned what it takes to get it all the way done. Do you think that's overblown? Like, does Florida have an advantage because they were here last year and lost? Or is it kind of like, you know, you catch a tiger by the tail and go, no. What have you seen in your career?
No, that's a good point. I mean, I heard something, too, that was interesting. I think my son might have told me this. But, like, when you look at Edmonton's path to the final, it was easier than, like, the Stars. Stars had a knockout Vegas. Stars had a knockout
Colorado,
right?
Brutal.
So they beat the Kings. And, you know, the Kings are a good team. But then they beat Nashville, right? It was Nashville or Vancouver?
Vancouver.
Okay, so they beat Vancouver. So you could argue that, you know, they had a tough series against Dallas. They played great. Dallas played well, too. I mean, so Edmonton kind of showed me something. But to your question is, yes, do I think the experience of being in the final and losing it, do I think that's going to be beneficial to Florida? I do personally, because they've been there. They've kind of probably – they can recycle it a little bit and understand what worked and what didn't work. And so, yeah, I mean, I think all that does matter. I think, you know, we'll get into the Timberwolves here in a second, but – like, I think you see, like, Jordan, like, when Jordan was playing for the Bulls, he had to lose to the Pistons a couple of times until they figured it out. And then when they figured it out and they dial it in, that's when you have trouble.
Yeah, no, I agree. Shifting to basketball. So my son, like your son, is, you know, he's into the Prize Picks and they have opinions on sports. And certainly your son kind of knows some of the details of, you know, Dallas being a good road team or whatever the case may be. But I look at the NBA final and this Luka guy, you know, now keep in mind, hockey fan that only watched basketball for the last 2 months, like a lot of people in Minnesota. Thank you, Ant, and the rest of them. But this Luka guy, I don't even know what this is, because he kind of looks like he would have been my right guard. You know, he looks a little heavy. He's a Euro. He's a guard, which is confusing to me because I always thought he was this massive human.
He's a point guard.
I know. I thought he was like a forward or a center. So he's unbelievable. You got Kyrie. I've watched this Boston team a decent amount because my daughter lives out there. And to me, this Tatum, Brown, I know Porzingis is going to come back, but they seem like they're like soft. There's something about the Boston guys where I'm like, I don't know. I think Luka would kick his grandmother down the stairs to win it, and I don't feel the same way about a Jason Tatum. There's a politeness to Boston, which is really weird for Boston because Boston's a bunch of dicks usually.
It's the opposite, yeah.
What do you think? What do you think, NBA?
I got to tell you, like, I agree with you. Like, I was bummed because I thought, you know, the Wolves look so good against Denver, right? They look so good. And defensively, I thought, I actually thought they could win the whole thing because I'd never seen a team in the NBA in a long time play defense like that. And you got Ant and all these other, you know, pieces, and they're going to be good for a while, which is kind of fun for, you know, Minnesotans to see. But then, you know, you got these two superstars. You got Kyrie, who I'm not a fan of at all. And then Luka, who's, you know, he's unbelievable, arguably the best player in the game. I still like Boston, and I like Boston because I think they're even maybe a little bit, you know, I don't know if I would say they're softer, but they're just more talented. They have more depth. This Brown's really good. They got Tatum. I think, you know, Dallas is going to run into, you know, I think they're going to run into an issue where you can't have just two guys score all your points, and you're going to need, when you win the chip, you need those other guys to throw in 10 or do something. And I think that's what hurt the Wolves. I mean, at the end, I mean, you know, Cat had a couple tough games, and, you know, some of these other players, Gobert and Conley, didn't really step up. I'm trying to think, the kid with the headband that, you know, stood in the corner and knocked down threes. I mean, just to win the whole thing, even in hockey, you got to have the role players do things because you can't rely on two guys to score 72 points a night.
Yeah, I heard a great quote about that. It was like your top six gets you into the playoffs, and your bottom six, your depth guys, whether it's basketball or hockey, they win you the championship.
Yep.
And certainly that's the advantage Boston in this one. This women's sports thing that's happening right now, and Billie Jean King had a really nice quote, I thought. She said, it's not a moment, it's a movement, kind of reminding people, you know, this isn't just because Caitlin Clark's gone crazy on social media, but the P-Dub won it. You know, I got kind of caught up in that jet stream, enjoyed it, bought him some purple shots, and was holding a P-Dub player's flipper teeth in my hand at the bar, so I felt like I got pretty close
to
you.
Where was this at?
So I went to the event at the X when they won at the Walker
Bryce
Cup.
Park?
It was moved inside because it was raining, but okay. But yeah, it would have been better in Rice Park. And then a couple of the girls had played with my daughter, and so we went to the restaurant. We were like, we'll go eat at the same restaurant as them. We're not really rubes if we just eat at the same place, but if we start following them around to the bars,
yeah, that's a little weird.
There was rumors they were going to go to Cowboy Jack's in Minneapolis. I had made a hard, like, that was where I wouldn't go to Minneapolis. That would be too much as a 50-year-old man. But I did go down to Tom Reed's, kind of.
Okay.
And it was pretty cool. You know, I want to get your, there's an interesting thing happening in women's sports, and I notice it mostly from a marketing standpoint.
Right.
If you watch women's sports, everything is about everything. It's about every young girl in the country, glass ceiling, Billie Jean King, Dream Gap. It's so intense. Do you think it's always going to be like that? Like every single thing is, you know, about change? Or will we ever get to a point where, same way we work with the Wild, I would just love to make funny commercials for the P-Dub that are about Taylor Heisey being an awesome hockey player.
Right.
You know, like but also older man talking about this, which is the wrong person to be doing it to begin with. But I'm just curious, how long do you think we have the sort of fist in the air before we can just go, hey, let's get into the nuance of the sport. You know, here's let's just talk about logo man threes from Caitlin Clark or breakaways from Taylor Heisey. It doesn't need to be about lifting every double X chromosome in the world.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm obviously older than you. I think as I've gotten older, you know, I've been in sports for 30 years, and so my answer now would be different than it would have been when maybe I was your age or, whatever, 20 years ago. I don't think it's a flash in the pan. Some people have said it's going to be like the WNBA. The WNBA kind of started after the Olympics, and these owners all put teams into their buildings in the summer because, they needed dates. And I mean, I shouldn't say it that way, but, it kind of started out hot, and you had these two or three good years, and it just kind of faded. And now it's got this big resurgence because of Caitlin Clark, and they've got a lot of good players and stuff. I think with the PWHL and all, women's soccer, I don't think it's a fade at all. I do think it's I wouldn't even call it a movement. I think it's here to stay. I think with kids younger, they're, it's everything you're kind of brought up on, right? So we were brought up differently than, our kids and then their kids. And so I think that women's sports is definitely a major player in the space, if that's the right way to put it. I enjoy it. I mean, I went and watched the USA women's play Canada in Tempe, and I had a riot. And they're good, right? They're good players. And watching Caitlin Clark and all these other women play basketball, they're really, really good. So I think, when you talk about, it's not a moment, it's a movement. I think part of what's happened from my perspective with women's sports has been, it's been kind of a moment, right? Where, let's all get behind this and support it. Then you move on to the next thing. You go back to the Vikings and the Packers and all this kind of stuff. I literally think that women's athletics is here to stay.
Yeah, it flipped a switch. It does feel
they're really good athletes.
You'll like this. So Elena's in the office the other day, our new employee, and she just goes, she's like thinking out loud. She goes, because we had done the P-Dub thing, and she's like, God, I really wish that this like the women's sports was where it is now when I was coming up. She just goes, I would have tried harder and I could have made something out of myself. She was like thinking out loud because I've watched all these hockey dads, well, she's not going to play in the NHL. That was the reason to not do the MAP in the summer or another checkbook hockey tournament or maybe go down to Bukestead or whatever. And I do think it's going to be interesting. The other thing from a marketing standpoint that's shocking to me, when the P-Dub came in and they didn't name their teams, I remember thinking this is such a – it's such a example at the time. Like, this is women's sports just not quite being ready for prime time. They can't even name these teams, right? Now, it looks like it's genius because they come in, they get the groundswell of just people who want to support this. Mm-hmm. So there's a group of people lined up to be like, I'm down for this. I'm not your typical sports fan. Plus playing in the X, there's a group of people that goes, hey, this is just like going to a Wild game. It costs half as much. So they get out of the gates. And now year two, they get to come in with a name, resell merch. So you're almost like into your third year before you have any stress. And then they can expand probably in the third year. So if you think of news being the driver,
right?
So it's new. Now it's got a new name. You got to buy all the things. Maybe there's 10 teams in the fifth year or the fourth year. So I don't know. Maybe they knew something that we didn't.
You could argue that prior to what's happened, women's professional hockey had a lot of issues. Two different leagues.
Fighting with each other. Yeah, Olympians.
I mean, they had markets where, not a whole lot of interest, and people were boycotting certain things and doing that the other thing. So I think they hopefully learned from all that kind of stuff. They brought in a really strong owner or fund or whatever it is, the guy from the Dodgers who did a they've done a really good job. I mean, they really have done a really good job. But so the WNBA right now, I was thinking about this the other day. Caitlin Clark comes in, she's kind of polarizing already. Some of the players don't like her, and it's all this kind of stuff. And people are like, oh, shut up. You should let her do her thing. She's elevating this game to another level. And you got this Angel Reese who's coming in playing the villain. And and go to ESPN now, they're front and center on everything.
Yeah, everywhere.
Everything. I mean, so whatever they're doing, it's working. People are going to the games, and they're good players. They're really good players. And it's amazing to see the resurgence in the WNBA, but I think it has a lot to do with the PWHL. I think it has a lot to do with women's soccer. That's my point. I don't think this is going to, 5 years from now, we're not going to be sitting here going like, oh, you remember when the Minnesota team won the thing? And, I think it's going to be a part of everybody's life.
No, it's great. Hey, before we get into Brooksy, rather than do this the normal way, I'm going to tell you about two of our new sponsors. We're going to talk about them because they're both cool.
Okay.
So one is Drip Drop. And does your family do the liquid IV thing? Does it, you have the little packets?
Yes, we've done it. Yep.
So the biggest challenge Drip Drop has is when you explain what it is, you have to say it's like liquid IV, which is the market leader. Two differences: faster hydration, so it works faster. It was designed by a doctor that used to go on mission trips and hydrate people. The folks around this are old Gatorade people, old White Claw people that are in this Drip Drop bucket. And the number one thing is it tastes awesome. So
do we have any in the office?
Yeah, I'll give you a pack. Oh, I'll give you a 32 pack to take to back to the Buckingham Palace there. But I so it tastes better, works faster. If you're a listener, go on Drip Drop's site. You can basically get, they'll mail you a free sample, and then you can get like 50% off of a 32 pack. I'm telling you, tastes better, works faster. 75% of people are dehydrated. Whether you're going out drinking and you mix this in like a college kid, or your kid's an athlete training, all the sports teams use it, all the military uses it. That's Drip Drop. We're thrilled to have them. The second one, The Grint. The Grint is a golf app. Mm-hmm. And golf is an interesting sport because you're either uptight, you know, country club, serious, got my gin score, or there's this other side of golf, kind of waggle, Bluetooth speaker, cigar, maybe a Zen. The Grint app is a social app for golf. So it does keep your handicap official. It does tell you GPS on any course, but it's connected to other people. So if you get a birdie, you'll get like, texts from people like, what's up? Or even like, hey, you're golfing on a Friday. Awesome. So there's an app called Strava. Some people use when they work out, maps your run, take a picture, get an attaboy from your friends. This is the golf version of it. And it's super fun. It's cheap, if not free, depending on how you do it. We're thrilled to have them. And both these brands have the same problem. Drip Drop has a better product, not as well known. The Grint has kind of this goofy name, The Grint, which I think means, I don't even know, greens in regulation or par or something, some golf slang. But you need to use both these things. They're awesome. And we're happy that they're part of the Pull-Tab sports world. Should we get into Brooksy?
Sure.
All right, here's the man. Double roses, two rose emojis coming at you. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're good.
Awesome.
You're in charge of the household, and where are you? Are you out in a compound, and you've hidden your children? Your wife's gone for a minute, right? So you're outnumbered.
Yeah. She had to leave a little last minute, so I got the younger four working from home this morning until I called 9911. So grandma's coming over in a little bit. I'll be saved at that point. But I just threw some food on the counter, locked the door to the screened-in porch, and made some pretty awful threats. So we'll see if that holds up.
You say the younger four. What are you dealing? How many kids do you have?
Five.
I have five.
Yeah.
So we had.
That's aggressive.
Pretty. It is. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. But last week we had a senior graduate and a kid have his last day of kindergarten on the same day. So.
Wow.
A unique distinction.
No thoughts about a sixth, just to kind of balance it out. Just the,
you know, we're keeping the door open.
All right.
You know, yeah. I like it. We don't plan much.
If you don't mind, Garrity, I want to go this. So, this resume back in the beginning. Okay, so we're at Grand Forks Central High. I guess I don't understand. How are you a 4-year starter quarterback? You're the point guard of the basketball team. You actually win state, and you're the shortstop in baseball. So you basically play all of the positions that are like the nerve center of each of the sports. And what were you, like Huckleberry Finn in Grand Forks? And like, people saw you skipping quarters across a river like 50 times, and they're like, hey, you want to do everything? I don't even understand. What were your parents athletes? What the hell is this? Are you good at darts?
I'm okay at darts.
Four handicap, by the way.
You know, I wasn't, a couple things happened. One, I got to grow up in a really good time in Grand Forks and just kind of play on a lot of good teams, from a young age, and the bar was high. But, you know, I got to, my dad was a college coach at the University of North Dakota. I always say, like, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, but we had the keys to the gym, right? So that was our thing. And my heroes growing up were the guys that played for the University of North Dakota. And, you know, I'd be in first grade, second grade, and I'd be, you know, throwing to the running backs or handing off, or, you know, I was around it all the time. You know, the equipment room and the equipment managers were kind of my babysitter sometimes. So I think so much of it, because you guys have been around me, I always say I played in the NFL with an accountant's body. So I didn't quite have like this overpowering athletic prowess, but I think I learned this innate ability to kind of figure it out and play the game, just because I got exposed to it from such a young age.
So where exactly would be state, where would state be held in basketball in North Dakota?
Well, there's a lot of options.
Really?
Right? You got Bismarck, Minot, Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
It typically cycled between those, but...
Same spot as the Hard Rock Cafes, I would think, right?
And all the casinos.
Yep. The year we won it was in Minot.
Nice.
And,
overnight trip, the whole nine yards. They threw out all the bells and whistles for you.
Well, you've seen Hoosiers, right?
Yeah, hell yeah.
So, I mean, it's,
you were Jimmy Chitlin?
Yeah, paint the bus. And, you know, it's different now living in a city and raising our kids. But, you know, you got a conference game in Jamestown. It's 20 below and you're jumping on the, you know, the yellow school bus to go play. So it was normal at the time, but just it's a little stretched out land wise. So, yeah, we spent some time in the yellow school bus. But, you know, the thing I love about growing up there is, like, you know, high school sports, much like here. I mean, there's not a ton else. So high school sports are a big deal, right? People are tracking it, paying attention. It was a blast.
Hey, cool. What are you not good at? Like, is there something where you're like, oh man, I am terrible at like Monopoly, or like, do you have, what's your blind spots athletically?
I got a lot of them, but it kind of, you know, like you said, at Huckleberry Finn, well, the thing in Grand Forks is I didn't play hockey, right? I a little bit of an ankle burner, you know, growing up. And we had pretty good stretch, you know, the Panzer brothers, the Patolny brothers, David Tanavi, you know, those guys were always kind of my vintage. So, you felt a little left out in second grade when you're like, yeah, all right, I'm gonna go down to Riverside Park and I'm gonna hang. How hard can this be? And you kind of get laughed out of the joint. But I ran with all those guys, and then I always say it's tough in Grand Forks. You know, you could be an All-American at five other sports, but if you're not playing in the state hockey tournament, it is a little tougher to get a date to the prom.
Wow.
So I had to grind a little bit.
That's so good. Second, he's over there throwing footballs and tire swings from like 300 yards away, and he's like still kind of mid in high school, right? Like, who did the Panzer break up with? Hey, I'll call her. That's I didn't even think about the hockey thing. It's staring me right in the face. And
yeah, you just nailed it. I mean, you're opening up some wounds as we speak.
I want to get into the Badgers because I know Tom can take us away a little bit here. You probably want him some money at some point, but I first kind of met you at the Crystal Axe golf tournament, and your group came up. I think you were listening to Eminem. I don't know that it was Lose Yourself. It might have been a different track, and you guys were basically like, this is how we did it. When we were doing the Rose Bowls, we had, you know, Cinderella Man or whatever you would. Can you just paint a picture? Double Rose Bowl champs. You're at the KK. It must have been the intro to the movie Kingpin when he's like grabbing slices of pizza off people's plates. Like, what was it like to be king of the world, BMOC, big man on campus?
It is pretty fascinating. You know, I got there as kid from North Dakota, and you know, my eyes were pretty big, and Ron Dane was a running back. He was already a superstar, right? That was kind of the first superstar I ever met. He was rolling, and he was a big man on campus. And I was just, you know, that first year, I was just hanging on for dear life and trying to survive the scout team. And we had, like, the number one defense in the country. And there was this guy, Tom Burke, who set the single-season sack record. And, you know, was an absolute rage monster.
Pimples on the back.
Those guys had the mentality. I mean, I got 11 stitches under my chin in the Coliseum 2 days before the Rose Bowl because I'm running the scout team, and I completed a couple passes on the blitz drill. We didn't even have shoulder pads on, and I all of a sudden I just got absolutely laid out, right? And Tom would hit me on the way back to the huddle, right? Plays over, I'm walking back to the huddle, wham. So I would say that first year, like, I was just trying to hold on and be a part of it. And it went so fast. I mean, all of a sudden, we were kind of upper middle of the Big Ten, but we just caught fire, right? And all of a sudden, you're going down to Pasadena, and Tommy Lasorda is speaking to the team, and you're on the Jay Leno show, and you're just looking around like, holy cow, what is this? And then fast forward a year later, you know, my first start was at Ohio State. I was kind of sharing time with a senior. We were up and down, had just had a tough loss at Cincinnati. He gets hurt. My first start is in the horseshoe at Ohio State, 2:30 ABC game, you know, with Lynn Swann doing the sideline reporting. And it's like, all right, good luck, kid. And, you know, we're down 17-0 in the first half. You know, caught fire. Scored 42 unanswered, beat them 42-17. They're leaving the horseshoe early. And I remember getting interviewed by Lynn Swann on the field and just kind of being like in that moment, it's like you get pulled outside your body and just kind of watch this thing happen, which ended up being winning 9 straight, including the Rose Bowl. And now you're kind of front and center in L.A. doing all this crazy stuff. And it didn't feel real, but it was fun. Yeah, you could grab a slice of pizza anytime you wanted. I'll put it that way.
So after that, though, so there were a couple lean years in the middle, then, right? Your sophomore, junior year, a little bit not the Rose Bowl type teams.
Yeah. So we had those two really good teams, and then we were actually going into my third year. We were like 2 in the country preseason, and maybe had our most talented team. And then I don't know if you remember, Tom, we had this little thing called the shoebox.
Oh, shoebox scandal. I don't know about this.
Oh, bring, yeah.
The
bring
wonderful.
Us Brooks has got to tell you.
What is this?
Well, you know, I am not a huge fan of the NCAA, and I think a lot of it's playing out kind of in real time. But that was the time where they doubled down on the strict compliance rules. So there's this little place in Black Earth, Wisconsin, called the Shoebox, and it actually wasn't a little place.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
It's right? Like Gartner's
40
house.
Minutes out of Madison.
It's like a Galleons.
Yeah,
Shields.
It's unreal.
It's an oasis. So what the guy is, it's a shoe distributor. So he distributes to all these, you know, smaller regional shoe areas. So he's got ridiculous inventory. So he's like, what the heck? I'll open a shoe store as well. So he kind of had everything there. Anyways, somehow over the course of time, he's a generous, you know, kind of fan of the people. And I don't think the store is really how he made his money. Anyways, it was like, there was a deal out there, right? For athletes and people associated with the program. And I mean, the guy would give, it was kind of this 50% off deal, and it went on forever. I mean, as long as anybody kind of remember, it was happening. So and he'd also give it to teachers and priests from the area or whatever. But anyways, we guys would go out, run up tabs, blah blah blah. So I'm heading home one summer, or that summer, for a couple of weeks off, and I need some golf shoes and whatever, a little swag. So I stop in and I get a couple things. I'm heading home, and I get back, and we're having a summer 7-on-7 at Camp Randall. It's just the boys, and I leave, and Tom Mulhern, who was a writer for the Journal Sentinel, comes like out of the shadows, right? This is like Deep Throat, you know.
Sewer cap slides over. He comes out.
Yeah. He's like, you know, don't get too close. He's like, I got to ask you a couple questions. And I'm like, okay.
Damn.
And he goes, I want to ask you about the shoebox. And I said, hey. All right. I go, hey, Tom, you're going to have to clear any interview with the SID. Like, I can't talk to you until you clear with the program. And I went down the locker room. I'm like, boys, set up your tabs, get your name off the books. Like, this shit's going down. All right. And everybody kind of laughed, right? They're like, are you kidding? The shoebox is whatever. Well, sure enough, you know, that guy opened up the books and they wanted to make an example out of football. So the day of our first game, this beautiful organization, the NCAA, came down with their ruling. They had all summer, but we're playing Western Michigan. And they suspend 24 guys on the day of the game. So it was just a ragtag bunch and whatever.
Who was the punt returner again? That was the kind of the headliner.
Josh Hunt.
Yeah.
Did you get suspended for that game?
I didn't. Well, the wonderful
He's
thing
a
for
star.
Me all worked
yeah,
out.
Exactly. So the other guys. So you're saying the other guys carried your burden for you because you were a quarterback. Yeah. I played center, so I can relate. So you just were like, "Hey guys, you shouldn't have done that thing with the shoes. I'll see you next game." That's kind of how you handle it.
I'll try to get you in the KK later.
No promises. I ratted them all out for immunity. So
I have so many questions about this.
But so then the funny thing was I didn't get suspended, but I got 24 hours of community service.
Ooh, what'd you do?
What did you do? Bus tables at the KK?
It was like, you know, the children's hospital and going to schools. And
some good stuff.
I don't remember everything. It wasn't like, you know, cleaning up trash on the side of the highway.
Oh,
that'd
have been great. That'd have been great if the Rose Bowl winning quarterback is cleaning up trash. In Middleton, Wisconsin.
Somebody's holding a bag. He's just throwing darts, just, you know, picking up empty bottles. So a couple follow-ups, if you don't mind. What kind of footwear were priests looking for at the shoebox?
Oh,
were they golfing priests? Okay, so second thing. Now,
that's a good question, actually.
I've been watching a lot of, like, Top Boy on Netflix, this gang show. So what you should have done, Brooks, as a leader, shortstop, quarterback, all the positions, point guard, you got to burn the whole shoebox down. I've been watching this. It's like when you got a body in the trunk, you burn the car. So what you guys should have done as leader, you go over to the shoebox, you gas cans. We film that in slow-mo. You're throwing the gas everywhere. You drop a match, and you're like, you know, let's roll, right? I mean, did you consider that?
Yeah. The funny thing looking back is like, you know, at that time it was just you had no, like, now you see lawsuits and these kids are, you know, they're starting to, obviously the world shifted, there's more power to the people. At that time it was like NCAA compliance, one, you just panic, right? Like it was just like you know, they are the Gestapo and have control of everything. So it was a, I would say, a much different mindset than it is today. But the funniest part about the 24 hours of community service is, fast forward to the end of the season, 11 players selected across the country for the AFCA, American Football Coaches Association Good Works Team. Guess who's elected?
Yeah,
the guy who did 24 hours of community service as a Good Samaritan. So I ended up getting a pretty big honor as a result of my service.
Starting foundations.
Wow.
I mean,
it's funny how it works, right?
That's the way it should work.
Hey, what's your favorite? Like, so if you're on the golf course, maybe you're into your second 18, you've had a couple drinks, the Bluetooth is going. What are your what's your best podcast story at Wisconsin? What's your what are your standbys? You know, kind of, you know. Go ahead.
So when I don't even know. So Coach Alvarez had a deal, I think, from when he was at Iowa, that if you won the Rose Bowl, the seniors and the starters got to go to the Playboy Mansion the next day.
Oh my!
So
yes.
I use this one when I'm talking to like high school kids, and they're, you know,
that's a great
story. I'm like, hey,
the shoe store
in
the Playboy Mansion.
That was his deal. He had a hookup with Hugh Hefner, and we're going after the shoe company in rural Wisconsin. Okay, keep going.
So, as a freshman, I was a redshirt freshman, so we were in the Rose Bowl. So seniors and surges go. So there's probably, I don't know, 25, 30 of us. And we get a bus. We go down to Santa Monica Pier for a little bit. We have a few beers and we kind of hang out. And then we go to the mansion. And it, you know, it's a, whatever.
This is unbelievable.
So this is a couple of days after the you know, their big New Year's Eve party. So everybody's kind of just hanging out. There's a couple playmates just like in jeans and whatever, just hanging out, and they give us a tour of, we do the zoo, we see the grotto, hang out in the pool house for a little bit, and you know, just hanging out, and guys are trying to sneak in, and we get to see little parts of the mansion. But you know, I'm 19 years old, so I still remember I had the disposable camera, which is a whole nother story, but it wasn't, you know, it was pretty benign. We're just hanging out. It's cool to see. So we get to the end, and Hugh is going to come out. So I'm kind of sitting in the back. Hugh comes out with three of the, like, really done up, you know, women that live with them, playmates, whatever, wives, I don't know.
Is he wearing pajamas? Pajamas, like a robe? Okay.
Nobody had the ascot.
Okay, good, good.
You know, he was on brand. And then CNN sports crew rolls up. Okay, so reporter, cameraman, whatever.
No.
Kind of meet him on the front of the mansion and
start asking you about the shoes.
I'm standing in the back, right? I'm just a freshman kid, and everybody's kind of going up, and I'm like, all right, probably, you know, half drunk at that time, like 2 p.m. Anyways, first thing out of the playmate's mouth when they come down the steps, where's the quarterback? We want to meet the quarterback.
Of course.
They usher me up front. I do an interview on CNN Sports with one arm around Hugh and the three playmates at 19 years old.
Very similar to Grand Forks.
So I'm talking to the kids. I'm like, boys, that's why you want to play quarterback, right?
You're like, take that, Panzer. Does that video exist? Like, is that on YouTube?
You know, somebody asked me that. I was telling this story not that long ago, but I got to find it some way.
I guess we know what Spencer's doing.
Well,
the rest,
you know,
of the day.
It's funny. Is John's staring at me, Brooks, as we're talking, because you know he's a Gopher fan, and he's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe this happened." I'm like, "That's what happens when teams go to the Rose Bowl.
That's what winning looks
he,
like."
He just doesn't. He hasn't experienced it.
Anybody naked at the mansion? I got to ask. As a redshirt freshman, did you see anyone with their shirt off?
No. It was
probably smart on their part.
Well, this is the second year. This is when he was starter, right, Brooks?
Yeah, it was, you just won it.
That is so cool. That is like, that's the coolest. Everything was better before.
I didn't verify it, but so my dad tells a story. He's like, you know, kid just won the Rose Bowl. You know, he's a little hungover. They're heading to LAX. He's like, I'm walking through the terminal, and you know what plays in airport terminal, CNN, and he's like, I'm walking and I see a couple TVs, and I'm like, Hugh Hefner, and he's like, is that Brooks? You know? Like my whole mind just got blown. We're leaving the Rose Bowl, Tommy Lasorda, this whole deal, and then now my kid's standing there with Hugh Hefner. So yeah, it was
so
pretty
I'm going to nerd out for a second because I got to ask a question about the Rose Bowl.
I just can't believe that
so
happened.
So, like, when you're in the game, when you're a game that big, right, and you talked about Alvarez, I mean, are there moments where you feel like it's super intense, right, or is it just doing business? Like, do you kind of get caught up in the moment? Like, I'm fucking the quarterback of the Badgers in the Rose Bowl right now? I mean
yeah.
As a 19-year-old kid?
I think you... It was interesting for me because I do remember my freshman year just running out onto Camp Randall for the first time. And it's such a different perspective that you've never felt before. Obviously, with just on that stage with that many people, it's just the environment is it's a whole new experience. But I think after you get used to it, it just kind of normalizes. And that's why you need so many reps and so much practice and everything else that, you know, once you're in the game, and I always said, once you kind of get through warmups, you don't feel a ton of that. You're just playing the game and trying to win. It all becomes relative. It's not like it's more important, right? Like when I was playing at Grand Forks Central and we had some good teams and played in state championships and stuff, that's as important as it can be to you, right? Like right. It means everything to you. So it's not like in a bigger game, it can mean more. You just know more people are going to see it if you succeed or fail, but you kind of get used to that over time. I think what happened to me, I actually, you know, talked to Mertz a little bit about this because, you know, what you have to do is just play the game. And I always say a quarterback can't be really sustainably good until there's scar tissue, right? Because what happened to me was when I was young, everything went so fast and you're just playing free and loose. And then all of a sudden, you know, you beat Iowa to go to the Rose Bowl, and now you got like, I don't even know, what is it, 5 weeks off where you're in bowl prep. And that's when it really kind of hit me, was all of a sudden it was like, whoa, like I just entered a different stratosphere. And then I think you get to this place where you're playing just to hold on to what you've done. Right. It's like, don't go backwards and just don't make a mistake and don't screw it up. And that's where you just can't play that way. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I told Mertz, he won his first two games and, you know, they crowned him king of the world and all the expectations. I won my first 14 or 15 games as a starter. Right. So you get to this place where you're just like, all right, just don't make a mistake.
Right.
Don't go backwards. And then that's where you kind of alluded to. Not only did the team have a couple lean years, I think I went through a stretch where I was playing just to kind of protect rather than letting it rip and playing the position. So long answer to your question.
No, I guess. Good.
Once you start thinking, you're screwed basically, right? Once you realize the moment, you know, can you give us a little, Florida Tuskers, I know this is not the most meaningful part of your career, but I want to know what a Tusker is. Is that like a saber tooth, like it's celebrating animals with large teeth like a walrus? And is there any good UFL like shenanigans story? If you're on a 30 for 30 about the UFL, what did anything funny happen when you were playing for that squad?
Everything funny happened when I was playing for that squad. I mean, everything we did was funny, right? I think the first 2 weeks of games, you know, my quarterback towel, you know, on my uniform was a washcloth from the hotel.
La Quinta.
So where to start? So, you know, a Tusker is like a wild boar. Right?
Okay, like
whatever.
A pig.
But, you know, I had... So I played in Dallas in 08 and then they didn't re-sign me. I kind of went through OTAs, you know, or I didn't. Nobody called me for OTAs. Nobody called me in the offseason going into training camp. So all of a sudden it's August and I probably stopped working out more or less in May or, you know, beginning of June maybe. And I'm kind of like, well, this is it, right? Moving on. And I'm mowing the lawn in August, and all of a sudden my wife comes out. She's like, hey, you got to come in. Like, Jeff Horton keeps calling you. He's called you 20 times.
Is that your agent?
So Hort was my quarterback coach at Wisconsin. And then at the time, he was with the Linehan and the Detroit Lions. So I'm like, Hort, what's up? He goes, what are you doing? I go, mow the lawn. What are you doing? He goes, hey, Dante Culpepper cut his foot in the shower and threw Stan – did his MCL. He's like, we need a guy for the fourth preseason game. So this is Monday. This is Monday at like 2:00. And I'm like, Hort, I'm a bag of milk, man. I can't play football right now in the NFL. I'm not in shape. He's like, come on, man, you gotta do it. I'm like, I can't. And he's like, all right, we're gonna sign Drew Henson. I go, fucking, I'm in. Let's go.
He hated Drew Henson that bad?
Yeah, I mean, well, I like Drew, but, you know, he's a Michigan guy, and it was my age, and, you know, I wanted the chance if he was going to take it. So, you know, I'm on a flight at, you know, I actually call a kid down the street, high school kid. I'm like, grab a football. We got to go to the park. The park. It's like Uncle Rico. Like, I just throw about 30 or 40 balls as fast as I can. I'm like, all right. Lady calls. I'm on a flight at 7. I get in Detroit, 10:30. Next day, learn the offense, practice. Wednesday, fly to Buffalo. Thursday night, play 3.5 quarters in the 4th preseason game. You know, and it was a blast. And we won, and I played all right. So, anyways, that's my precursor to, like, you know what? Maybe there's still a little gas left in the tank if I got back in shape. So that next week, Jim Hazlitt called. So we had an unbelievable staff down there, right? Like Sean McVay's first job, he was our tight ends coach. Ike Hilliard, Jay Gruden was our OC.
Jeez.
And I knew Jay a little bit, and Jay's like, let's go. We need a quarterback. I think we got a pretty good team. This will be some fun. He had a background in the Arena League, so he's like, you'll have a blast. So we go down there. Quarterbacks made a little bit more money, but everybody makes 50 grand, right? So you got, like, Jermaine Wiggins, who I had played with in Minnesota. You had these guys that was kind of like me at the end, and then you had these young guys just trying to get a sniff. But, you know, all of a sudden, you're going with Wiggy to Dick's Sporting Goods to try and find some cleats that fit. And, you know, it's just but, you know, and then we're playing in the Citrus Bowl. Okay. I don't know if you guys have ever been, but the Citrus Bowl is 85,000 seat stadium, you know, and there's, you know, 86 people at the game. So
family.
They're televising on Versus. They got Doug Flutie and Cordell Stewart, you know, are doing the game, and you can literally hear the guy in the fourth row's conversation, you know, with his buddy, and just it was a riot.
That's awesome.
So, but going back to, okay, so you're at Wisconsin, and then you got drafted, or did you sign as a free agent with the Vikings? Was the Vikings the first team?
Sixth rounder
to New York.
Oh, the Jets, right?
Yep.
Yep.
And then, so what's that transition like? So you're this star quarterback at Wisconsin. Did you think you're going to get drafted? I mean, I know that's a weird question to ask, but, you know.
No, I was in a weird spot, right? Because, I mean, like my buddy tells me, he's like, Brooks, you weren't very good, but you played every Saturday at noon on ESPN for 4 straight years, right? Like, people can't forget your name. But I had kind of an up and down career by the end of it. I always, you know, played in that system where we didn't throw it a ton. So I think there was a lot of question marks. I went to the combine. I had a good combine. I went to an all-star game. I had a really good all-star game down in Florida. So my stock was kind of rising. So I thought it would be anywhere from, you know, late fifth round to the free agent. But nobody really knew. And then even when I got drafted, it was like, I have no idea if I'll make the team. Right. It was just kind of a show up and try and get it going. But it's a whirlwind, right? Like, the draft happens, and especially back in those days, I really don't know how much it changed, but, you know, you're on a flight, you know, in the next couple of days, and then all of a sudden you're showing up, and it's like, here's the playbook, practice is tomorrow. And it's a pretty, you know, baptism by fire experience. And then, you know, that first even mini camp will kind of define what kind of reps you're going to get going into training camp. And so it's just kind of hold on, and it all moved really, really fast. But I was lucky. I had Paul Hackett, who was right off the Bill Walsh, you know, tree in San Francisco of the West Coast offense. And then Vinny Testaverde and Chad Pennington were the quarterbacks in that room. So for a kid that was a football junkie and grew up around it, to be able to sit in there in that room and just learn the game of football from the lens of and the experience that those guys had, for me, was just you know, kind of beyond my wildest dreams. So it was a blast.
So the question I have, so obviously you played. I mean, you played games and you started and played games in the NFL, but as a backup, you know, are you know, they always say, like, you have to be prepared. Were there any games where you're just standing there like, spaced out, like, whatever.
The worst job in the world is a backup quarterback, right? The best job in the world was in the old days when they had the third string quarterback. Okay, because third string, you got a pretty good idea you're not going into the game. And it's not that you don't want to go into the game, but I went into the game, you know, in my career, you know, Tavares Jackson pulled his groin like the second play of overtime in Detroit, right? So you're standing there the whole game, and then all of a sudden it's in the critical moments, like, you know, go in. Oh, by the way, you had no reps in practice. You know, just let it rip, kid. You'll be all right. It's just survival. That's tough. That's a stressful environment to be on edge every single play from the first play of the game to the last. Of like, all right, you just get thrown into the fire at that position is a difficult thing. But funny story about that. So third string guy in New York. This is my third year. And, you know, I would work out with all the practice squad guys on Tuesdays, typically a day off. So we'd go in and work out. And we get done with the workout. I come around the corner. There's two guys sitting there, O line and D line. And they're like, man, they're kind of laughing at me. They're like, you got it made. You got the best gig in the world. Like, you don't do a damn thing at practice. You know, you got your hat on backwards and a dip in during the game. You travel with the team and you get paid on normal roster. You know, they're making practice squad salary. They're like, dude, you got to make that. Next week we're playing Jacksonville at home, and Pennington tears his shoulder, comes out. Jay Fiedler goes in six plays later. Jay Fiedler tears his labrum. Game ends. Next week we're playing at Baltimore. I come around the corner on Tuesday. Those same two slappies are sitting at their locker. I have 40 media members, Sal Palantonio, Ed Werder, A-listers, all huddled around my locker. And I said, hey, Slappy, you guys still want my job?
Yeah. Ray Lewis. Yeah, that's great.
Hey, are your kids freak athletes? Are they, like, climbing the trees behind your house and throwing darts and, you know, sticking landings in gymnastics? Or what? How are the genes coming through?
Well,
because your wife's a soccer player, right? She played soccer at Wisconsin.
Yeah, she's a better athlete than me. She's in the Hall of Fame at Creed and Durham Hall, and she was soccer, basketball, and track, and she's talented. There's I think some good genes. We got the spectrum, you know. I think I have a little more patience with the development of the athlete than maybe my wife does. I'm kind of the, you know, one that's at the basketball game, you know, the sixth grade basketball game. That's like, hey, buddy, good job. Like, you played hard on defense and you tried good. And she's the one that's like, you know, if you play like that one more time, you know, you're not getting dinner. She's the tough one. She's like, that sets the bar pretty high. But yeah, they're all over the place. We're lucky they all love it. They play a bunch of different stuff. So, you know, and I think us having played is helpful, especially as you guys know how crazy the youth sports world can get. I think having a little bit of perspective and the lens through which, you know, we got to see the world kind of helps. But, you know, they're all right.
Did you think it was disrespectful to take number 9 on the Vikings and after Tommy Kramer had sort of made that so meaningful? I mean, is that something you struggled with?
Yeah, I was a Tommy Kramer fan, as a kid. And but to be honest, like, I don't even know. I feel bad, and I've gotten to meet Tommy a number of times kind of since, and I didn't think about it too much at the time. I assumed that enough time had passed, and I didn't really think about it much. I wanted 5. That was kind of my number, but Chris Cluey, the punter, and you know, guitar hero specialist, was not going to part ways with that. Yeah. So I settled for 9.
Hey, you did some coaching, you know, both Hill Murray, Creighton. Now you have the kids coming up. Is that going to be a bigger part of your life? Are you going to kind of, are you coaching your kids now? Or are you going to sort of work up the ranks, maybe roll with your kids? Or are you non-parent coach guy? Where are you at with the coaching, and did you enjoy doing that?
All over the spectrum. Yeah, I loved it. We had a magical run at Hill, you know, my first year when I was done playing. And then I went to Pitt and coached with Paul Christ. I was a quarterback coach for a couple of years. Kind of realized that four kids and that lifestyle probably wasn't going to be the path for us. So I jumped off that train. And we moved back here, and then I was kind of trying to, at 33 or 34, I guess, start my professional career. And then at the same time, I was just arrogant enough or stupid enough to think I could also be the head coach at Creighton-Durham Hall. So I did that for 4 years, coached over there in the time my kids were coming up. And I absolutely loved coaching high school kids, coaching youth kids. It's natural for me. I'm passionate about it. It's just, you know, it got to be too much, kind of having two full-time jobs and then also having the five kids. So today, I'm really good at being the second or third assistant is kind of my role typically in this. Any position where I never have to be responsible for an email or any scheduling, I'm cool with. But, you know, it's just so busy right now. I try and do a little bit of hoops and a little baseball, but you know, can't commit to doing a ton of it. And I like that too. I think I spend enough, you know, a lot of time with my kids, and I kind of want the athletic career. I want to support them, but I want it to be theirs. You know, I don't want it to be where I'm the one driving it. So, I always say the best time for me isn't going to the game or the practice. It's the time in the car, that I get with the kids.
That's good. Well, you kind of look like Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. So you might want to keep it an open option. What community are you in? I know Tom knows this, but where do you live now? Like where are your kids playing sports?
We're in Eagan, kind of the Mendota Heights. Eagan area is where our kids play. And then one just graduated, but Creighton-Durham Hall is where the boys are in high school.
Awesome. I got a couple more, but I don't want to –
No, go ahead.
This is just kind of just a low. I just want a little color from the Badger years. So, will you just paint the scene for me, like KK, like what kind of music is happening at that time? You know, what cologne are you wearing? What are people dressed like? What are you drinking? I just want a snapshot of that. I guess it's early 2000s, right? So, are you listening to like Snoop or like? Paint a picture, right? So we're in the movie, kind of big man on campus. Set the scene. What do the girls' hair look like in this era? Give me a little color.
Well, you look back at that time, and that was really an awful time for kind of style and fashion. But when I first got to
zipper shirts, now, right?
now that I have daughters coming up, I'm hoping we cycle back to this because when I got there, it was the kind of the flannel.
Yeah, it's grunge. Oh no,
it was grungy. It was flannels, big baggier pants, baggier everything.
Doc Martens. Yes.
Yeah.
I got you. That's awful. That's the opposite of yoga pants. You were just in full lockdown. You were at the height of your powers, and all the girls look like Eddie Vedder. That's terrible. I'm so sorry. that is so good. Oh my gosh. What was the KK like? Like that whole like secret handshake world. Give us a little taste of that.
Yeah, it was it was a simpler time. You know, it was the time in Madison where, you know, now you hit bar time in Madison and it basically looks like Vegas, right? Because there's so much going on and there's so many restaurants. Back then you had to either go to Gumby's and get a pizza, or the Parthenon and get a Euro, or La Bamba's, get a burrito as big as your head. You kind of had three options, and it got quiet. But, you know, Wando's was only one level at the time. And I will say that the KK's done a great job. It's changed a little, but it hasn't changed much. It was, you know, it was such a high level of perfection even back then. It still is. It's pretty similar to what it is today, but you know, I was I try to toggle between. I was talking to somebody this the other day. It's like, I was not a skip the line guy, if I could help it. You know what I mean? Like, I was a way in the back of the line guy, just kind of get through there. But
mad at the people.
I mean, I think that's where you met the people, right? Like that. I wasn't just trying to not be an asshole. I was also like, hey, this is kind of where, you know, the freshman girls hang out. So, it was a little self-serving probably as well, but, you know,
strategy.
Doc at the KK, the cooler, the whole nine yards. Like it was a pretty good movie. I don't know if I can fully do justice to.
But like when you're playing, I can't imagine like you're playing for a big program like that. And then were there times you didn't go out? Let's just say you had a bad loss. Would kids come up and give you shit? Or was it always?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I think that first year, like, that's what I'd say, too, is like, you know, we had a good group of guys. The hockey guys were great. You know, still the era where, and maybe it still is this way. I feel like it's gotten a little bigger. But, you know, we kind of ran together across sports. And it was really a pretty simple time, but yeah, listen, it's not like, you know, you listen to Peyton Manning talk about when his dad was playing at Ole Miss and he'd get carried into the frat house on the shoulders and they'd all just kind of be excited for the team. And then how different Peyton's experience was at Tennessee, I'd say there's a layer of when it's good. And there's people rolling out the red carpet and trying to grab at you, but there's an insecurity that kind of comes with that too. Of, you know, I had a number of situations where, you know, people would come up in a restaurant or my family members, you know, were standing in line at the bar or whatever, and you know, all of a sudden, comments start flying that aren't as positive and. People kind of start to look at you like you're not a person, right? You're kind of like, you know, I don't know, this product or whatever.
Right.
And they say some pretty ridiculous things. I was always kind of okay with just brushing it off and being self-deprecating for the most part. You know, there's sisters, my mom, my dad, like there was stories where, you know, they're getting into it with people just because I think it's harder to take when it's your family member. But
yeah, totally.
Yeah. You avoid the crowds at times for sure.
There
was times I should have just went home earlier. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, totally.
I am thankful that there wasn't the social media pictures and the videos and stuff like that.
Horrible. So that story about Alvarez and Playboy Mansion is just an ace of spades. What's your favorite pro story? Because you played at some. I mean, you've got Tony Romo's in your orbit, you know, obviously New York had to be amazing going from Grand Forks to New York, the Vikings, the most storied franchise in the NFL, as well as the Lions. What's your kind of pro, what's on your playlist for your pro stories?
Yeah, I gave you that Detroit one earlier. I think the thing that's so fascinating about that, the pro game, is especially when you're a guy that's kind of down the line and you know, gets shuffled in the deck, is, you know, went through it in Dallas, went through it in Detroit. It's, you know, you don't get it. Nobody's really worried if you're set up for success, right? I mean, it's kind of like, hey, man, like, here's your shot. It's okay. You didn't get any reps in practice. You don't know the system, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, you got a half a football to kind of prove if you're going to have a job next year. So that, I think of a few of those environments where you're just showing up. And I remember I get signed by Dallas and I go down and it's like a day off. And so I'm going in, get my locker set up and meeting the equipment guys and getting my stuff. And I'm sitting there and T.O.'s the only other guy in the locker room. And holy shit, that's, you know, Terrell Owens. And he walks over, what's up, man? And he's like, hey, you want to come over to my place, hang out, watch the games, whatever? I'm like, they're gonna kill me or what's going on here? Like, this is a setup. But no, I mean, the NFL is great, but I think the biggest thing was, like, you know, it's a job, and you show up and you got to do your job, and that's the only way to earn the respect of the locker room, and then everybody kind of goes home after. And there's a lot of fun to be had, but it's, you know, all of a sudden you're thinking you're going to New York to kind of have this extension of college, and our whole team was, like, you know, a bunch of old men in my eyes, right? They all had 2-3 kids, and they went home at night. So it was definitely just learning how to be a pro, I think, was the biggest thing, and showing up and doing your job.
That's great. My last question, you're obviously quite an athlete. I know you joke about the accountant body doing all this stuff, but who's the best athlete, whether it was college or pro, that you ever just saw? Like, you're just like, that is not, you know, it's like they said about Tiger Woods, right? He plays a sport I'm unfamiliar with. What's the greatest athlete you came across, whether it was pro or college?
Yeah, I think, it's different when you get to throw to guys, right? Because you can really just feel it. But throwing to Calvin Johnson for, a day, I guess, in Detroit, I'd never seen anybody like him that was that big and could run like that and was that smooth. I mean, his throwing radius was a mile. You know, you just threw it anywhere and it just, like, disappeared. It's funny, though, I think Antoine Winfield might be the best football player I ever played with. He was just such an amazing, small guy, but his instincts and, ability to hit people and just the way he played the game, just being an all-around player, he was unbelievable. But physical specimen, I mean, Adrian Peterson and Terrell Owens, I would say, are the two guys that just overpowering physical ability. Never seen anything like it.
It's awesome.
Other than maybe someone like you, Eddie Dyna.
Yeah, I was all conference honorable mention, Brooks, two-way starter, center linebacker. I don't usually say honorable mention. I kind of mumble the honorable mention, like,
yeah,
all conference.
It's like the three Rose Bowls. I get it.
Yeah, we beat Eden Prairie, but no one knows there was like 8 houses in Eden Prairie when I was playing. But like now, it's like, it's great. You have any final for Brooksy? Or
no, man, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for coming on last minute. Appreciate it. But I'm glad we had you on. This is awesome.
Yeah, man, you're a stud. I do want to know, did your wife finish mowing the lawn when you got the UFL call? Were you like, honey, I'm out, flip her the keys or what?
Yeah.
It sounds like he probably wouldn't ask her that question.
I don't think so, yeah. Yeah, she's like, you're 33% from the field, son.
I'm pretty sure she left it, because when we played on Thursday, I got cut on Friday, so I was back home by Friday night, so I'm sure I just finished it then.
You're going to win the Crystal Axe? Minnesota has it. I know you're one of the stronger golfers. That event's coming up here in a couple weeks. We got a hype video going out next week for Minnesota. Do you like Wisconsin's chances to recoup the battle for the Crystal Axe?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty big underdogs. I don't know if you checked the money line, but I think we're pretty big underdogs again. But I've been more intentional this year of recruiting some talent,
okay,
rather than just drunk and scony. So I do want to talk to Ryan about making sure we set it up so that we can actually run across the fairway and take the axe away, because that's about as much fun as you can have. So I want to go take it.
Yeah, you want that Ryder Cup Massachusetts kind of feeling. You should get Pavelski, maybe. He's a Badger. He might be available. I heard he's a stick.
Yeah, he's a really good player.
Well, hey, you have been an outstanding guest.
Thank you so much.
What a stud. Brooks Michael Bollinger. Go take care of those 11 kids you got, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for everything, Brooks.
Thanks, boys.
Peace, brother.
Take care. We can't play this game.